Start your engines and join me in the new mobile game, RuPaul's Drag Race Superstar. May the best superstar win. Available now.
In a world full of straight people,
aren't you glad there's WOW Presents Plus, the number one place in the world to see Drag Race?
RuPaul's Drag Race, may the best drag queen win. Drag queen win.
And so much more. Subscribe to WOW Presents Plus. Still only $4.99. Subscribe today as streamed on TV.
I'm Matt McConkie. I'm a writer, performer, and host of this podcast about And Just Like That. But now that we've recapped both seasons of the show, I couldn't help but wonder, should I go back and cover the original Sex and the City? The answer, of course, is no, but I can't be stopped, so every week I'll be joined by my very own Mirandas and Charlottes to unpack an episode or movie of their choosing. We're doing Sex and the City Roulette with extra Samantha and none of the Che. And just like Matt, welcome to the show. Hi, everybody, and welcome. Today we're going to be talking about Season 3, Episode 15 of Sex and the City, Hot Child in the City. This, of course, is the one where Carrie dates the guy who lives with his parents, and Samantha's client is a 13-year-old. And very fittingly, I am joined by, I'm going to call them a hot child in this city, but that is okay because they are over 18, but just barely. Acclaimed playwright, TV writer, and performer. They have flown very close to the sun, and by the sun, I mean Michael Patrick King, because they not only appeared on The Comeback, but also wrote for Two Broke Girls and The Cool Kids, fresh off the success of their new play at La Mama called My Beatnik Youth, a solo riff. Justin Sayre, hello.
Hello, how are you?
So happy to see you.
Oh, so happy to be here. So happy to see you.
So we've got so much to get into.
I know, it's very exciting.
You know, as I mentioned, you've been in many ways sort of enmeshed in not the Sex and the City universe per se, but like the sort of a parallel universe. Sure. So you've been orbiting it, or it's been orbiting you, or both. But what is your relationship to the show itself, level of fandom? Where are you?
I mean, I was a fan. I have revisited it. I like it. I don't know that that's the
you sound surprised.
I like it. No, I do. It was a kind of hallmark of being in New York at that time, and it reminds me, you know, it's kind of like comfort food of a New York that was the New York that I first moved to. You know, so it kind of is reminiscent of that for me. And I think, you know, it captures a lot of what the fun of New York is still. So that's very exciting, and I like it. And in a weird turn of events, and I didn't even realize this until I just rewatched it, the 13-year-old client of Samantha's in this episode is Kat Denning, who was, of course, on Two Broke Girls.
Yes. And I was sent a video of, I don't know if this was an uncab show or a live show you did, I think some years ago, where you were, because of your access to Michael Patrick King, you'd been given some, I think, drafts of Sex and the City 3, the movie that was never made. Do you recall any of the concepts that you shared with the audience? I know it's been a while.
Well, just to be clear, I don't want to get some nasty from Michael, but it was my own concept of what I would have pitched to him.
Of course.
I think one, they fought crime. I think there were a lot of strange roads they went down, but none of which I would have seen now that they're just on Just Like That. I never would have imagined those. I always thought they would have gone to space or something, you know, why not?
Maybe that's coming. Maybe that's season 3.
Maybe.
Have you been watching it just like that?
No, I haven't been watching it just like that. I feel like there was something really kind of lovely and amazing to that New York that I knew And even going back and watching this episode for our talk today, it kind of feels like, oh, that was just this wonderful corner of the world.
Right.
That is shifting and changing. And, you know, so I haven't revisited it. But I hear about it. My partner watches it, and I hear about it quite often.
Don't we all? You can't live on planet Earth and not hear about it.
I've been involved in a lot of Che Diaz conversations without really having seen the evidence up close. So,
have you managed to form an opinion on Che Diaz even without having seen the show?
I have. You know, it's that thing. I mean, I try not to take it personally that Che Diaz is an outspoken non-binary comedian, as someone who was an outspoken non-binary comedian who knew Michael well. But for me, I think it's like when you first come out and you're just a little overzealous with how gay you feel you need to be, as if you're catching up, as if it isn't a lifetime marathon of being as gay as possible. So I kind of chalked a lot of that up to being like, oh, we have to, you know, plant a flag and be the most non-binary person in the whole world. But yeah,
which in a way feels very realistic to me. Like, I can not care for Che Diaz's comedy while also recognizing that Che feels like a very real person to me.
Absolutely. I think the tough part is, especially as, you know, as comedic writers, when you're watching a stand-up special and it's like, oh God, what is happening here?
Yeah.
You know, but you know, I think it's also, I feel complicated, I think, about Sarah Ramirez, you know, gave some uncomfortable talks about, you know, compared themselves to George Floyd. And I was like, all right.
Oh, I didn't hear that quote.
Oh, yeah. Oh. It was in the New Yorker. It was a little tough. But, you know, you think we're all trying to do our best.
Yeah.
And we're all trying to make our voices heard and make our art count. And I think, you know, we do that with our full hearts. And sometimes, you know, we get a little high on our own supply, but God bless them. You know,
God bless each and every one of them. And that's, listen, right. Even though I mean, as I'm sure you've heard, Che Diaz is not going to be part of season 3, and not that we have to choose between outspoken non-binary comedians, but there might be some more space on the roster.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
right.
Che is playing clubs. Che is like Che is a setup punchline, like comic. What I'm saying is, you're not in the same camp. Che is not doing a show with Mama. Che doesn't play at Joe's Pub.
I'm glad you said that, because I was worried that Che Diaz was going to come for my very lucrative jobs.
You're safe.
Thank goodness.
Okay, well, to get us into Hot Child in the City, we have a kind of a newer correspondent to the show, Justin, who's been sending in very helpful voice memos. I don't know if you've been watching Truman Capote versus the Swans.
Oh, yes, I have been.
Truman is a friend, no big deal. And and shockingly is a Sex and the City fan. So he's been sharing his thoughts sort of week to week and just kind of helping me refresh our memories as to what happens in the episode, just the general beats. So, Renee, if you have Truman's latest.
In this episode, Carrie Bradshaw begins dating this strapping, long-haired gentleman who looks quite a bit like a surfer, like Laird Hamilton or somebody. But I don't believe there's no mention of surfing in this episode unless it, you know, was cut for time or something like that. And this fella owns his own comic book store that was, you know, I say owns, of course, in quotations, because it was, you know, something that was gifted to him from his wealthy parents, with whom he still lives above Central Park. I believe in the same building as Gilda Radner, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, I'm just going to come out and say it. I had some issues watching this episode. My cable was on the fritz, and I called DirecTV. I said, send someone down immediately. I have a show to watch. And, you know, they sent this gentleman to fix it, this absolute strapping lumberjack. Well, not really a lumberjack per se. He was kind of a shorter Filipino guy. And so he, you know, comes in, and of course, you know, one thing leads to another, and I wasn't able to watch the episode. And also, I should clarify, when I say one thing led to another, I sort of mean that I kind of sexually harassed him until he could no longer take it, and then he stormed out. So I was not able to finish this one. I apologize. But next week, I'll be back. Don't you worry.
I didn't hear that in advance, so I didn't apologize. I didn't realize that Truman actually wasn't going to be as helpful this week.
No, but helpful in his dear old sweet way. I mean, it's sure. Nice to know that people are still harassing gentlemen from DirecTV.
Yeah, you know? There's something comforting about that.
That's right. That's old school homosexuality, kind of upstairs neighbors on NY, you know, SVU yeah. or something, just clutching a robe, being like, I never heard anything going on.
Well, thank you, Truman, for that contribution. And and also, please don't record voice memos and drive, which is what it sounded like Truman was doing there. But yeah, I mean, we'll get into the beats of the episode, but he sort of set the table for us. But tell me why you chose this one to talk about today.
Well, really for two reasons. A, I think it's a very funny episode, which I kind of always kind of skewered towards the funny over the serious kind of months. But I thought it really had the perfect kind of, it felt like it was the perfect kind of New York summer where you're just kind of going through days and unfolding and you do one thing after another and you're at people's houses and then you're at another event. Those kind of rolling free days of being young and fabulous in New York. And that's what it always reminds me of. And it also, I really love it because it's one of the few episodes where you see Carrie really having a lot of fun and really laughing a lot when she's high on the pot.
Yeah.
At the episode. She's so kind of joyous and silly and it's fun. And I always like it for that reason. Plus, for some reason, and I don't know why, this is the episode where Charlotte and Kyle, or her husband at the time, what's his name?
Trey.
Trey, they go to a sex therapist, and he asks them to rename their genitals. Mm-hmm. And she calls hers Rebecca, and he calls his a schooner. And I don't know why, but for some reason that carried on for about 10 years with my friends and I, just being like, oh, he's going to put his in her Rebecca, you know, for much longer than it deserved, but there was.
Yeah, of all of the Charlotte and Trey stories, I mean, it really does feel like we're hitting the fertility struggles over and over again with her, but this is a real highlight in that long journey. And yeah, you can like, you're so right that you can feel that sweltering heat, and it's such a specific kind of summer in New York that, you know, makes you wilt.
Oh, sure. But I love it.
You know, the guy that lives with his parents, you know, we find that out pretty early on. Carrie stumbles into his comic book store. He kind of asks her out, shows her the comic that he's working on himself. And the first time that she goes home with him after a date, she learns that he lives with his parents.
Yes.
Which
a lovely Angelette. I don't know why. I need to know that, but I was like, oh, it's Angelette. How wonderful.
Wonderful. But it's, of course, a deal breaker. I mean, almost a deal breaker for Carrie, as certainly is for, you know, according to her friends. I got to say, the first time I saw it, even now, I'm like, I don't know, living with your parents, especially in Manhattan, I get it. I don't really have the same judgment around this.
Sure. No, I kind of agreed with Carrie where she was like, oh, he put his money into the shop. He's getting his life together. You know, like, you understand that, especially when people are trying to be brave or trying to do something of note or something, follow their dreams, that sometimes sacrifices get made. So I didn't mind that. And he was very cute. He was one of the cuter ones, because she was all over the map.
Oh yeah, some of the guys they date in the show, not cute enough. They're simply not cute enough.
You really want to sit them down sometimes and be like, what is going, like, come on, just pick a lane, ladies. Pick a lane. Just all
We
over the place.
all over the place, but listen, as Truman said, there are some Laird Hamilton vibes, and
That's right.
I get it. We can overlook a lot of things. And by the way, if my parents had ever lived within like 100 mile radius of New York or LA, I'd still be living with them
Oh, that's really,
to this day. Oh God,
really.
of course, just for the free rent alone.
Oh, no.
No. Just
No, you
simply
couldn't pay
no.
me. I even in my mother's house now, where she lives, and she's a lovely lady. Lovely, lovely lady. But 3 days in, I'm like, we gotta get out of here.
You gotta go.
The groceries are not worth it. I can buy my own Diet Pepsi, you know. It's like, oh my God, all right. You know. No thanks.
Yeah. But there is something about the high school vibes of this
Oh, absolutely.
episode that I so relate to, and it so draws you in. And yeah, like you say, you don't get to see that side of Carrie so much. And some of it's by design. I asked Michael Patrick about this because, famously, Carrie never says where she's from, who her parents are. We never meet anyone from her family. And he was basically like, I don't know who her parents are, and I don't want to know. And basically they don't exist. And anytime there's like the tiniest little crack in that in Sex and the City, I'm so fascinated because we're given so few breadcrumbs toward Carrie's past. And the only glimpse of that in this is when she says something like, this reminds me of me driving my parents' Oldsmobile without telling them or something. These like fleeting little glances. And we get a little one of Samantha too, because she mentions that she worked at the Dairy Queen.
Oh my God. I love it. I love
Yeah.
it. I also love that. I think there's such a sweet moment where the girls are saying, well, they're over-sexualized at 13, and they're saying, how else are you supposed to get boys to like you? And Samantha's the one to be like, nope, that's
Yeah.
not what we're trying to do here. And I thought that's such a good, it's such a good take on what the show is about. What I loved about the show was that you could be a sexual person, you could be a sexual woman, certainly, and it wasn't about being sex obsessed or it was about being a fully fleshed out person and having your needs met and finding love that fulfills you and looks like you. Feels like what you want in the world. And I thought, especially for a character like Samantha, who often gets kind of, relegated to be the slutty one or whatever, it was nice for her. I thought such a nice color on her and such a nice turn to see that it's not about boys liking you, it's about you liking you. You know,
Yeah,
what a great
exactly. And
moment.
they always choose these great moments to deepen Samantha in kind of a surprising way, like humanize her a little more than you'd expect
I'm
from any
sure.
other show. And yeah, it's when Carrie says in her voiceover, like Samantha, the one thing that Samantha had that these girls didn't have was a childhood. It's so moving.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Going back to the high school theme. Who were you in high school? What was that experience for you?
I did fine. Strangely
Good.
enough, I did fine because I was very gay, and I, by all rights, I should have just been harassed nonstop. Not that it was justified, but in the time and place, you would have thought, certainly I would have had my horror stories, but I did fine. I did fine. I had a lot of friends. I went to 16 proms.
16.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I was a great
Wow.
dancer and I wasn't going to bring you home pregnant. So I was a perfect date. I picked gorgeous flowers.
Of course.
And, you know, I love to go and have a good time. So I went, we had a sophomore party, a junior prom, a senior prom, th those three, and then homecoming dance, big dance. So I went to all of those, all 4 years of high school with different girls. And then I got asked to go to a few other proms because people were like, oh, you seem, you're fun. Come with me to go to Bishop Hope. And I was like, sure, I'll go.
Where was this?
In Pennsylvania, actually near where Michael Patrick Green grew up too. He grew up in Scranton, I grew up in Wilkes-Barre.
All right.
So we had hometown connection.
Not at all surprised that everybody wanted to go to the dances with you. 16 is just, that's just,
A
that's a lot of work. That's
lot.
just a
Oh,
big number.
yeah, but you know, everybody likes to go to a dance if you've been asked.
And in terms of your level of outness, I mean, were any of these girls hopeful that something was going to happen at the end of the dance?
Well, I did have a girl. I did have girlfriends in high school. What I can say is, I was as gay presenting as I am now, but I was dating women. So there was always kind of a question mark. And then, you know, I came to New York. I came to New York, and I think I was here a week. And so I went to NYU and somebody was like, oh, you're a fag, right? And I was like, oh, probably. I mean, I don't know. You know, there was no going to be some bisexual step. There was nothing. I was just, that was the end of it. So, but yeah, no, I was, some of them were hopeful, I'm sure. And some of them, they got paid off and well, and everybody had a good time. But you know, my senior year, I took a lesbian and her girlfriend drove us to the prom and picked us up after. And I was like, this is more my speed. This is wonderful.
That sounds like a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a similar thing with NYU. It's like as soon as you arrive, any fanfare you were sort of expecting about being this sort of special little gay flower is pretty quick. It's like that's the least interesting thing about you from the
Truly.
minute you arrive. Yeah.
Truly. Absolutely. No, there was no, and you better catch up, you know, because everybody's been gayer for longer. So get ready, you know.
That's right. Well, I mean, speaking of, I had braces when I arrived at NYU. I didn't get them until my senior year of high school, and then went to acting school with braces and like cystic acne. I was a mess, but I bring it up because Miranda gets those braces in this episode.
Yes.
A lot of PTSD for me around this.
Really? Oh my. I'm so sorry about that. I never had braces at all.
You know?
No, I didn't have them. My mother said, your teeth are straight enough. Good luck to you. And
Yeah,
they
you've
are.
got great teeth.
Yeah, they're pretty all right. But no, I never had them. But you know, I imagine that it was, you know, it's tough to have brace. That seems like a lot of hardware in your mouth and the tightening and everything. No thanks.
Oh.
And especially to sign up for them as an adult, that's got to be a certain kind of bravery. You know, it's why I don't know if you've been watching the most recent season of Drag Race,
Course.
but it's why I was
My
such a Maya Amon LePage fan, because I thought, you know what? The fact that you got braces and you were like, hey, I'm on Drag Race with braces, mazel. Good for you, honey. Flipping
Yes.
yourself all over the place.
Oh
Good
my
for you.
God. I'm so sad that Maya's gone. I mean,
I
obviously we
am.
have not seen the last of her, but it was just so fun to see her lip sync every week.
Absolutely. Well, that's the thing. I watch that show pretty religiously. And you know, I was having not an argument, but a friendly banter as one. I'm sure this is how straight people talk about sports or something. You know, we were
Yeah,
sitting
yeah.
around being like, "Well," and I thought, you know what? If you were at a brunch and Maya LePage flipped over your mimosa, you would lose your mind. You would lose
Of
your mind.
course.
You would think gay people are the greatest people in the history of the world. How can we make such art on this level? You'd be so happy. I'm sorry, she doesn't have got a lot of good reaction shots, but she's marvelous, you know?
She really is. And the braces enhance that in a
Oh,
way.
absolutely. Absolutely. I thought, good for you, you little meatball. Whatever's going on for you, you're marvelous. I
She
loved it.
really is. I mean, I hope they do. I'd like an All-Stars season that's just lip sync assassins,
Oh.
where you bring back Maya, Silky Ganache,
Oh,
you know, or
sure.
imagine those just week after week. I mean, my God, that's heaven.
Delight. Utter delight.
You know, this show is all about honest conversations where we really face our fears. And for some of us, it's a fear of aging. For some of us, it's a fear of carbs. And hey, I get it. The fear is real. But that is why I'm so excited to tell you about our sponsor, Hero Bread. Hero Bread has remade many of your favorite foods, but in these fluffy, delicious versions that include no net carbs, 0 grams sugar, and fewer calories, plus protein and fiber. Two of my favorite things. I've always said if I ever have twin children, their names are going to be protein and fiber. What did I have for lunch today? A tuna sandwich on their seeded bread. It was the perfect texture. It toasts up just like a dream. My God, was it good. And right now, if you go to hero.co and use code LIKEMATT, you will get 10% off your first order. So don't give up on being a breadhead, because Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co, use code LIKEMATT at checkout. That's LIKEMATT at hero.co. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. As many of you know, I'm a big therapy person. I would say for me, the greatest benefit of therapy, if I can look back at all of the years that I have spent in therapy, has been changing the way that I speak to myself internally. You know, everybody always says, like, yeah, you gotta treat yourself the way that you would treat a friend. That's much easier said than done. So many of us are our own worst critics, and it takes some help to untangle that. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try because it's entirely online, so it's convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire, you get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. So take a moment, visit betterhelp.com/likematt today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/likematt. And I mean, our other, you know, sport, of course, is Sex in the City.
Yes.
I, as you mentioned, Kat Dennings or Kat Dennings?
I think it's Dennings.
Dennings. Who is Kat, whoever that is. She plays Jenny Brier. Let's call her Jenny.
Yes.
You know, this is, of course, Samantha's got a new client. She's the daughter of this big restaurateur. She wants Samantha to plan her bat mitzvah. And, you know, understandably, Samantha is very thrown. This person seems to have more power than she does. And it's all played for laughs, but I don't know. I'm in an interesting place with young people. My friends' kids are starting to become fully realized, you know,
Really?
children and young adults. And I don't know. I guess I'm not quite yet secure enough in like the aging process to not be threatened by young people, to not either be sort of just judging and you know rolling my eyes at them while also being terrified of being replaced by them. Where are
Really?
you in that journey?
Oh, never. No.
No.
Never once. No, it was said to me early on, it was said to me in the worst way. It was said to me by this older gay man at an event once, and he meant it as like a spell of like, one day you'll be invisible like the rest of us, you know? And it was meant as a certain kind of like, I'll be not part of the sexual economy. I'm not part of the sexual economy now. Do you know, I couldn't give it away now. I've never walked into a bar and people were like, well, nobody's looking at me like a cartoon pork chop ever. But I, What I have noticed and what I see from people who I admire and people who have kind of broken through that is like, if you're interesting, you're interesting. And if you let yourself be open and let yourself learn, certainly from young people and be part of the conversation rather than limited, you don't, that doesn't really happen. I have friends who are much older than I am, who are still very engaged, have friends and things like that, that are younger and involved. And I myself have friends that are much younger than I am. And I don't worry so much about being replaced as I do. Well, I guess the thing that does worry me, if anything, is that I think young, the only fear I have for young people is they're getting so caught up in something that I feel very lucky to be on the other side of and have escaped from. And I just hope that they kind of start seeing that their destinies are their own, because they're not, I feel like they're not as rebellious as you used to be, or as you once could be. And there's a kind of sheen of individuality that we're all given through Instagram and all these things that we curate to look at the world as we want to look at it. But they're not, because of that, they don't end up being exposed to things that could challenge them, that could take them in different directions, that could make them think differently and make them rebel in a new way. That I feel bad for them, and I kind of do my best whenever I can to really have conversations about like, oh, you should know this. Oh, you should do this. Or, not in a preachy way, but kind of linking the dots of like, oh, this might be interesting for you. What if you did that? Or what if you did that? I find that kind of encouraging rather than fearful.
And it sounds like you have some just natural parental instincts.
Sure, it might be. I mean, it's also, and I was actually talking about this. I was talking about this because we did a talk back after the play that I'm doing right now. We were talking about kind of artists and things and artists' kind of legacies, and that's always been a big part of my work. And it comes from, I think, a sense of I felt very deeply that as a gay person coming up when I did, I moved to New York when I was 17 in 1999. And it was really the tail end of the AIDS crisis. You could see, there were just like not a lot of 40-year-olds around. And growing up with the knowledge that AIDS was a thing that was killing people like me and also killing amazing artists and people that I would have had relationships with had I come to New York, had this terrible thing not happened, that became a real part of my process. And it's always something that's kind of overshadowed a lot of things for me because I knew how deeply I had to work and find out and research who these people were and how to kind of connect with that art that was being made. And it's made me kind of a great asset because I want that work to continue for other people. I see myself as part of a continuum rather than, oh, what, this starts and ends with me. So, yeah, I guess in that way, I guess I do want to be like a good gay elder because I didn't have any. I didn't have any. I had a lot of people who were, and rightfully so, who were burned out by the AIDS crisis and really kind of so deeply hurt by it. I mean, my gay elders all had PTSD when I got here. So they didn't have a lot of time to teach me about Maria Callas or, all those things. So I hope to kind of be an asset as I do get older, not much older, but as I do get older. To young people and just say, hey, there's, you can look outside the paradigm, you can do things on your own, you can be adventurous, and part of that is your queerness and how you're going to see the world, but part of it is also all this amazing art that's was being made is part of it, that all feels very natural to me, I guess.
So we talked a bit about Rebecca and the Schooner.
Oh, sure.
Anything else on that one? I mean, I guess for me, the headline is it's just another example of Charlotte's strength, just that she does not give up. And some of the things that Trey is saying to her in this episode, there are so many moments where I'm like, fuck this man. But when she loves you, she does not give up on you, whether you're her husband, her friend, her kid.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't know how it ever came up, but one day, I think in the first year that I was on Two Broke Girls, Michael went around and started telling everybody who they were on the show.
Oh,
And
wow.
I thought, oh, well, I'm a Miranda, you know, easily. And he was like, no, you're a Charlotte. And I was like, oh, shit, okay. And
Wow.
I was like, all right. And I think there is a certain amount of that. Certainly, I can see a little bit of a Charlotte, certainly. But, you know, it is the thing of Charlotte does, I think she often gets a raw deal as per the movies, you know, just
Oh, yeah.
humiliation. But, and also, I love that episode where that guy can't come without calling her a dirty whore.
Yeah.
I've always loved that one. just her little face being like, just do it. Okay.
Yeah.
But in this, I kind of thought I like that she still tries, that she's not, she does really try with everybody. She's trying to be better. She has a certain way of doing things and a certain outlook on the world, but it doesn't, the great thing about Charlotte, and I think the thing that always kind of defines her more than the kind of perkiness, is that she really does get her hands dirty. You know,
Yeah.
she's not somebody to kind of sit back and be like, oh, I don't do that. She's like, okay, let's try. Let's figure it out. You know, you want to masturbate to Jugs, which I thought was very funny. Okay, fine. I'm going to let that happen. I'm going to figure out a new way. You know, she's ever adaptable. And I think that's really why I continue to just, I've always liked her. And I liked that I got called Charlotte because of it.
I have embraced my inner Charlotte, at this stage of life. But when I was younger, and when I was, when this show was new, I wanted no part of that.
Oh,
When you're younger, you just want to be a Carrie or a Samantha.
sure. Well, I never wanted to be a Carrie. I never wanted to be a Carrie.
No?
No.
I mean, it may be too close to home in some ways because she's the artist
Sure.
and.
Well, I also just thought she would often like make mistakes. Like, why she ever left Aiden in the first place? Come on. He
Oh,
makes furniture. He loves
agreed.
you. You know, but okay. But that was my, you know, fine. She
Well,
makes her.
listen, spoken like a true Charlotte.
That's right.
You know?
That's right.
Yeah, so fun to see Carrie getting stoned with
Oh, yeah.
Wade at his parents' place, and they're eating the bucket of chicken. She's throwing it off the balcony. They're laughing. They're spraying the hose at each other. Just good times.
It is. It's funny. Fun, fun, fun.
Are you a weed person?
I was when I lived in LA. I loved an edible. And they certainly helped with my social anxiety. And I will occasionally have a gummy and go out on the town if I really am going to see a lot of people.
That's
But
so interesting. Part of the reason it's never really taken for me is because it has the opposite effect in terms
oh,
of social
really?
anxiety.
Oh, see, it mellows me right out. I don't care. I'm lively and talkative. Yeah, no, I don't mind it. Actually, I wrote a whole show because I, when Trump got elected, the first time I would get high and like talk about, because weed makes me very talkative. So I would get high and make fried chicken in my house and like debate the American problem, you know. And
Oh
I had
God,
done
to
it
be
so
part of that
often.
salon.
Oh, it was really quite something. I did it so often that I ended up writing the show and we did it at Joe's Pub and halfway through the show. I was like, and now everybody gets a piece of fried chicken because this is exactly how it would happen. You know? So it was kind of marvelous. It was very fun.
And speaking of Joe's Pub, you'll be back there in May. Do
Yes.
you know the dates?
I think May 16th, we're back for another edition of the meeting. which is my show that I've done forever here in New York, the Meeting of the International Order of Sodomites. Yeah, we're doing a quarterly review, so we're back every kind of quarter. This will be the spring edition. We'll do a fall and a winter. And yeah, it's very exciting. I'm very happy to be back. I think I'm talking to some people right now because there's a whole group of us, kind of funny comedians, who would never be on Drag Race. You know, because we don't have, even though deep down, I don't know how you feel about this, but I feel like if I got the call tomorrow, having not sent in a tape, having no skills, I could still win it. I could still walk away with the crown.
Absolutely, no question.
That's right.
Yeah.
Even though I know nothing about makeup, I don't sew, and I'm a terrible dancer. But
Can't
I
do
feel
those Maya backflips.
like, that's right. I feel like when called upon, suddenly those skills would become known and I would just kill it.
Would you shave the beard?
Oh, sure. Yeah, no, I have a play coming up that I'm gonna do hopefully in the fall, and I'm gonna have to shave it. So I'm getting all ready. I'm preparing my partner. You know, you're not gonna see Daddy anymore. You're gonna see a pubescent child for a couple weeks, but you'll get used to it. But yeah, no, there's a whole bunch of comedians who I love who have no hope of being on Drag Race, but we all want to do a character for Snatch Game. So
Oh.
I think we're just gonna get together and do our own version of Snatch Game and the characters we've always wanted to do. Because it is the question, like, oh, who would you do? You know?
And can you share who you would
Oh, of
do?
course. Well, I have two options.
Okay.
I have two options. One, I think I would do Sonny Von Bülow, which three people would get, but I would laugh.
I don't even know who that is.
Sonny Von Bülow was a very wealthy woman whose husband poisoned her with insulin, and she was in a coma for like 30 years. And she was played by Glenn Close in a movie called Reversal of Fortune with Jeremy Irons in 1998.
Oh, okay.
Marvelous. And she just eats ice cream and she's angry and she falls in the bathroom. She's in a coma. I think it would work out great. Or I would be Golda Meir, the Prime Minister of Israel,
Oh,
and I would
right.
just kind of pepper my conversation with. I would play like a little Jewish grandmother and bring out like pickles and things and like pass around nosh and be like, oh, I wasn't paying attention. You know, just kind of just like, oh, I'm Golda Meir. Yeah. I think that'd be funny.
Hard to choose between the. I mean, I guess you're doing more than one show. Why, maybe you don't have to choose.
Maybe I don't. Just bring them all. We'll stay all night. Yeah. So yeah. But yeah, no, it's nice to be back at Joe's, and you know, especially with all the other projects that are kind of going different directions. It's really nice to kind of it's been a really comfort to come back to New York and be able to still lock in. Josh Sharp and Aaron Jackson, who wrote Dicks, were in the first quarterly division of the meeting that I did. And they said, you know, it feels like New York's finally coming back now because the meeting's back. And I kind of took that mu very much to heart.
Yeah, it's iconic. So if you're anywhere near New York, make sure you catch that at Joe's Pub in May. And then you'll be back in LA to do something at Dynasty.
Yeah, we're going to do a reading of a new play called The First of Us to Go, a white woman tragedy. And it's because I have to tell you, so right before the pandemic, I hope this is. We've veered off topic, and I
Oh,
hope
that's
that's
what we're
all right.
here to do.
Oh, good, good. It was right before the pandemic, I had written a play that we did in LA called Ravenswood Manor, which was a series of six plays. We would do a new play every week as the kind of continuing story of this campy horror soap opera that I'd written. And one night during the last week, it was myself and Drew Drogi and Sam Pancake and Alec Mappa. And Scott Thompson from the Kids in the Hall and Jack Plotnick, we were all backstage. And J I think it was Jack or Scott said, it's so nice to be in a room with other gay comedians because it so rarely happens. You're usually the one, you know? And it was like, oh, yeah, that does It is so rare that we're all, and we all really like each other and like working with each other. So, so I came up with this idea to kind of write a comedy where we all play ladies at a funeral called The First of Us to Go. So we're going to debut that at Dynasty. And then I think I'll be back in LA in the fall to do my play, Lottie Platchett Took a Hatchet Again, which we did this October. So lots of LA coming up, I think.
Lots of LA, lots to see.
Oh, sure.
Anything, any stone that we have not turned over from Hot Child in the City? I think we kind of did it.
I think the thing that, again, I think the thing that is just so fun about this episode, and I love so much about this episode, is that I just love that last scene where she, they're standing in front of the mom and she says, "Did you bring pot into this house?" And she's gonna kick him out, the stoner car comic book guy. And he blames Carrie and she says, "Yes, it's my pot and I'm taking it with me when I go." And she does. And I thought, oh, how wonderful. It's just what a
Oh, yeah.
wonderful little reversal. It's such a fun episode. It's kicks along and it's funny and it does remind you that, I don't know, even watching it today, I was like, oh wow, there are only 34 in this episode. That they are still very young women figuring it out. And I think that in the juxtaposition of talking about teenagers or teenage life was something that I, even watching it this last time, I was like, oh wow, they are still so young, still finding themselves. And I think that's why I like it so much.
Yeah, I do too. And yeah, for such a long time, they were sort of this fantasy version of what getting older would look like, and now I'm older than they are on the show, which is terrifying. But luckily, I can always go to And Just Like That, where they are still older than me.
And how are you finding that? Are you finding, because you said you were getting nervous about getting older. Is And Just Like That helping that transition?
Big time.
Oh,
Yes.
good. Oh, good.
Yeah, they're making it look like a real good time. And I mean, listen, I don't, I'm just a broken record about this, but of course, the most comforting thing about it is that for the most part, they are still together, that,
Sure.
this chosen family is growing older together. And I know it's realistic in some ways that Samantha is no longer part of that because we are, friendships do change, but that is, has left a hole in my heart that I am still working to heal. And I started this podcast really as a piece of activism to try to bring Kim Cattrall back into the fold, but hasn't worked. It's
You got a cameo. You're doing Christ's work. You got a cameo, and she's alive somewhere.
That's right.
They could have it could have been much worse that she could have fallen down a well and still be there, dead. And so she at least she's alive in the world, and you got a cameo. So I appreciate you, and I encourage you, and
Thank
maybe
you.
season 28, when they're 110 years old, Kim Cattrall's hand will reach up through a grave
She'll be
and she'll do a scene.
back. And then I can finally rest.
That's right. That's
And
right.
I can finally die. Justin Sayer, what a delight. Thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, thank you. This was so fun. Thanks for having me.
And that's our show. Please do give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and follow us on Instagram at And Just Like Matt Pod. And Just Like Matt is a World of Wonder production created and hosted by me, Matt McConkie. Our executive producer is Renee Colvert. Our associate producer is Jess Walensky. And our audio engineer is Justin Mattson. Many thanks to Michael Pressman and everyone at World of Wonder.